This is Julie Chen, Professor of Chinese Studies at University of Helsinki. In today's Helsinki China podcast, I would like to discuss a very interesting and timely issue, and that is the Chinese Communist Party is going to turn 100 years old on July the 1st this year. So with this 100 years of anniversary, I think a lot of medias are trying to kind of have a reflection on what has happened over the past 100 years, and of course, evaluating, analyzing the achievements or the challenges facing the Chinese Communist Party. I think a lot of our audience already know the Chinese Communist Party is a monopolistic party that dominates the political life of China. It is the major policy-making body in China and basically oversees the central, provincial, and local organs of the government to carry out the major policy of the country. And in light of this very big event, you know, this anniversary, I decided to do something a bit different. And that is I want to discuss Marxism, which is a very important ideology for the Chinese Communist Party, because this is kind of a Western imported ideology, but it was modified by the Communist Party in China and then further used to govern the party and the whole nations. And I happen to notice that there is one very interesting scholar, Federico Rusadelli. He's working at University of Naples, L'Orientale in Italy. I have noticed that he's doing something very interesting because he studied how Marxism was syncretized with Confucianism in China. And this leads me to question, well, so why was it necessary for Marxism to be syncretized with Confucianism? So I cannot answer this question myself, but I had the honor to have Federico Busadelli with us today. And a bit of introduction about him. He's a lecturer in Chinese history. Again, I have mentioned he works for the University of Naples, L'Orientale in Italy. I'm very grateful that you are here with us today. And Federico, so let me begin with the first question. How was Marxism syncretized with Confucianism?
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Julie, for inviting me. It's a pleasure. And what a difficult question. And I feel a huge responsibility. I don't think I will provide an answer, but I can give some of my reflections on that. First of all, we all know that the People's Republic of China is a communist country today, but we also know that the institutes that around the world are in charge of spreading Chinese culture are called Confucius Institutes and not Karl Marx Institutes or Mao Zedong Institutes. So the issue of the relationship between Marxism and Confucianism is not just an abstract philosophical question, but it's a very concrete issue in if we want to understand contemporary China. And of course, the relationship between these two big ideologies was always present in China from the 1920s, when the Communist Party of China was born. But looking at the People's Republic of China, we can very roughly identify two different moments. During the Maoist period, we all know that the relationship between Marxism and Confucianism was a dialectic relationship. Marxism, in its Maoist interpretation, was the negation of Confucianism. Was a total alternative, right? It had to replace Confucianism. Then things changed very much from the late 70s up to the present day. We have a relationship of coexistence between Marxism and Confucianism. Of course, the relationship could not be reversed. Confucianism could not become the official ideology of the Communist Party of China. That would have been ridiculous and that would have undermined the legitimacy of the Communist Party of China. So Marxism has to remain as the core, the official, the orthodoxy of the country. But at the same time, it was urgent, more and more urgent, to find a coexistence between Marxism and Confucianism. Just let me also point out that there is something that these two ideologies have in common, which also makes this relationship very intriguing. They are both very complex ideologies. So when we talk about Marxism and when we talk about Confucianism, we never know what we are referring to, actually, because we have totally different Marxisms and we have totally different Confucianisms. So they are not philologically or philosophically precise categories. They are open to interpretation. And what they also have in common is that they are both ideologies that have been concretely used in political terms. They have become the central ideological platform for more recent experiences or for the imperial centuries, as in the case of Confucianism. So they have something in common that also favors this kind of coexistence and combination. This debate of the coexistence between Marxism and Confucianism is also linked to this concept of Chinese characteristics that we see growing right from the 80s to the present day. Talking about democracy with Chinese characteristics, Marxism with Chinese characteristics, anything with Chinese characteristics implies the existence of a Chinese identity that somehow changes foreign elements. And this identity is roughly, again, Confucian in its very broad sense. So your question is, how was Marxism and Confucianism, how were Marxism and Confucianism synthesized or put together? I would focus on three concepts that were used by the Chinese leadership from the 80s to the present day in order to slightly modify the Marxist ideology using some Confucianist values. The first, immediately used by Deng Xiaoping, is the idea of a Xiaokang, of a moderate wealth, which is a reference to economic growth and private property also as a positive value and as a corrective to Marxism. And it also opens the path to the idea of diversifying society, because it opens right to this idea of a progressive economic growth that will necessarily benefit someone first and maybe someone later. And so it's a first corrective to the Maoist narrative of total egalitarianism. And this is very strong today, but particularly in the 80s, in the early 90s. Then we have, especially with Jiang Zemin and then Hu Jintao, a great focus on the concept of hexie, of harmony. Again, a very important Confucian concept, which might seem a very innocuous concept, like hexie, harmony, is absolutely positive. We all like harmony. But in political terms, it means accepting diversity, because harmony is different from homogeneity, from egalitarianism. So if you accept a hexie shehui, a harmonious society, this means that the Communist Party of China acknowledges that it has to rule over a society with different social classes. And this is a huge corrective to the Marxist narrative, to the revolutionary narrative. And again, it is done through a reference to a traditional value, traditional positive value, which is also articulated on the international stage, for example. The idea of a hexie shejie, of a harmonious world, means a multipolar world in which you don't have the hegemony of the United States. So it seems like a very banal and very positive value, but it entails very strong political instances and orientation. And then with Xi Jinping, I think we have, of course, these two elements, but there is a third one, which is this idea of a fuxing, of a rejuvenation of the Chinese country, of the Chinese culture, which refers to Confucianism in also in a nationalist, as the Chinese essence of which the Chinese should be proud of. So we are completely reversing the Maoist narrative now. And this is done without creating any rupture with Maoism. This is the ability of the Chinese leadership is to keep together the entire history of the People's Republic of China while making great changes. So this idea of Xi Jinping, of a national pride of Confucianism as the symbol of Chinese greatness, of a powerful identity that ruled Asia and the world in the past, is yet another use of Confucianism. And I think that if we look at this different concept, we understand why Confucianism was so important in correcting Marxism, but at the same time in building a new Chinese narrative that can help the Communist Party of China preserve its legitimacy over the country, over a completely different country with a diversified society in a competing world, preserving the status also of, they have to coexist, but Confucianism cannot substitute Marxism. So this is the big dilemma, and that's why the Communist leadership has to find this common ground between these two ideologies.
Thank you. I think judging from what you just say, it seems that you have answered my second question as well, right? Marxism cannot survive without this process, I assume, right?
Yes. Oh, but again, I think your question is very important because it also helps us reflect on what are we talking about when we talk about Marxism in China. So if the question is, can Marxism as an ideology survive? I think that it's not surviving already. But if we are talking about Marxism as the narrative that gives the Communist Party of China legitimacy over the country, of course, in that regard, it cannot be discarded anyway.
Right? Yeah, so, that's very important to highlight the difference. Yeah, and in a way, Marxism has become Marxism with Chinese characteristics in China. Right?
Exactly. But if I can add something on this, it's also interesting to see that at the same time, also Confucianism was somehow transformed following Marxist theories. And we see that this attempt at harmonizing the two ideologies also works on Confucianism, because, of course, you have to present Confucianism as a progressive ideology, right? As something, as a form of thought that imagines history as moving across stages. You have to find elements of social justice within Confucianism, and you have to stress them. That's why we have a huge literature in contemporary China on how Mencius was, for example, caring about social justice and redistribution and so on and so forth. So you see that this work of harmonization is on both sides.
It's interesting that we use this term syncretize, but I was thinking in a way, another way to explain this, doesn't it mean this is some kind of indigenization of Marxism? I mean, indigenize it into China.
Yes.
And because I have been looking also at people who do research on Christianity, for instance, in China, and they find out a lot of similar process. You really have to basically make Christianity a Chinese religion if it wants to survive there.
Yes, absolutely. This was the intuition of Deng Xiaoping, right? The idea that indigenization was necessary, also in terms of social practices, that you cannot simply erase centuries of habits, centuries of practices. You have to include them. And so what I find interesting is that indigenization is equated to Confucianization because, and here we also see as a resilient concept in Chinese culture, Confucianism is equated to the Chinese essence, to the Chinese tradition, right? But this is also an artificial construction because we all know that the Chinese identity is so diverse in itself. It includes completely different religious, spiritual, philosophical orientations. But when the government, when the official narrative has to find a definition for this Chinese identity, then it's Confucianism. And that's why we are talking about the Confucianization of Marxism as a synonym to its Sinicization today.
Very interesting. You know, just out of curiosity, maybe I can ask you one more question. Have you noticed that in your study, has there been any Chinese person who really resists this indigenization? So meaning that if I want to understand Marxism, I have to understand its original meaning.
Well, I would say today, this is a very, very marginal approach. This was very visible in the 20s, in the 30s. If we look at that historical moment, at the first contact between Marxism and Confucianism, then we see a completely different approach. We have to introduce Marxism. We cannot interpret Marxism as through our indigenous categories, but we have to understand that this is a Western ideology coming out of a different context, and we have to accept it as it is. But then the narrative changes completely. And this is also in itself, I would say, as a concluding remark maybe, also a reaction, a general reaction to the narrative of Western modernity, of modernization, as a pattern that can only originate in the West. So when Xi Jinping talks about Fuxing, and when he tries to syncretize, to harmonize Confucianism and Marxism, he's also acting against this idea that modernity was produced in the West and the other countries have to copy it. So I think it's a strong statement also in this regard.
As a concluding remark, can you tell us a bit about what you are doing or what you intend to do in your research, the next step?
Yes. Well, on the one hand, I would like to continue this survey of Marxism and Confucianism, especially in the late 90s and early 2000s. I'm working on Tang Yijie, but I also worked a bit on Li Zihao and the thinkers. Parallelly, my other project looks at federalism and self-government in China. So the concept of self-government, of local self-government from the early 20th century to the present day with its different conceptual articulations. And I think it's an even more concrete way of looking at how the political system and the political narratives in China evolved, clashed, and changed across the 20th century.